Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Laura Manny, Ty Kickey and Dominic McHale. Together we form Cahoots. It's a bit like a transformer. Each individual car piece is joining together to form one bigger transformer. You're listening to...
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Good start. An appropriate start.
I thought it would be nice for it.
In this episode, are they called episodes? In this podcast, I suppose. We are talking about the man himself.
Hosanna Snohorda.
I have to jump in.
Hosanna in the highest.
I hate jumping in.
Go on. No, you don't. You do it every time.
Oh, do you know it's a he?
It's a figure of speech, I suppose. We're talking about God. We're talking about God and all things to do with God.
Big G.
Laura Manny.
I'm a God girl.
Your track record with God is
well documented. God girl.
Oh my God girl. I am a fan of Holy God. Now.
H-G.
H to the G. Look,
H-G Wells.
Put it to you this way, right? I was raised a Catholic. I would still consider myself to buy into some of the beliefs of Catholicism.
Hope to die a Protestant.
I would have... masses of reservation pertaining to lots of aspects of lots of reservations to lots of aspects of Catholicism, particularly the Catholic Church. But I believe in God, and this belief has helped me through sad times. This belief is something that I would like to pass on to my children, and this belief is just, I find it consoling and wonderful. I don't like to examine it in too much detail, but I like the notion that there is somebody minding me.
Ty Kickey, God opening arguments.
I return to the subject of the friend that I've told you about, who often doesn't put his pants on properly, loses his mobile phone once, twice a month, doesn't know where his keys are right now. A mess of a man. And he's the only person I know who is absolutely adamant that there is no God. He's a militant, he'll remain nameless, he's a militant atheist. And I always like to listen to him to pump up my Godism, if you know what I mean. Because
pump up the jam.
What has baffled philosophers and great thinkers since the beginning of time.
He's got his head around.
This local mess has decided it's a non-issue. There's no issue there. So I'd be very skeptical.
Skeptical.
In fact, I often skip them. I'm skeptical of hardcore fundamental atheism. I'm talking, and I suppose Dawkins actually would probably describe himself as an agnostic. I'd say he would say that they're all like as heavy as it gets is agnosticism.
That's Paul Dawkins for those who don't know who he is.
It's actually John Dawkins.
Andy
Laura
Dawkins.
Scored as him in Irish college,
and he was covered in orange juice. But to come to the conclusion to what I'm saying, I would be very skeptical about hardcore atheism. I would be a theistic. I'd love if there was a word, and there might be, for a kind of a theistic agnostic, as it were. So I would be
leaning one way.
I'm kind of leaning towards God. And to touch on something you said there, Laura, I don't spend too much time thinking about it or watching YouTube videos about it anymore. I probably did at one point. I was hoping that somewhere in something I was reading or listening to would be a proof, but then I realised that was just more egoism and kind of intellectual whatever to try and come up with a proof.
Well, I think you raise an interesting point there. I would also describe myself as agnostic. I don't know whether there's a God or not.
Okay.
I would also be sceptical of not just people who are militant atheists, but people who are militant believers as
Correct.
Well.
Oh, yes. 100%.
Either extreme end of the spectrum, whereby you've got the militant atheists who think anybody who believes in God is an absolute idiot and a fool and non-scientific. And then you've got the militant religious people who think that if you don't believe in God, you're a horrible human being or you're a sinner or whatever it is. I don't know. I think it's just as arrogant to claim that there is no God as it is to claim there is a God.
Yeah.
Because we just don't know. We can't know. And even if we were to be able to tell, like, what's your definition? Like, how do you define God? I mean, like, you do believe in God, Laura.
I do.
Do you think that it's somebody in the sky, as we say, or is it a bit more abstract than that?
It's probably a bit more abstract. I'd be in total agreement with you there. I think extremes of anything are a problem because it doesn't allow any room for kind of debate or discussion, we'll say. I to be honest, I'm not even mocking here. My version of God that I believe in, he's just a sound chap.
He's a nice lad.
He is sound, but he is...
But he is a he, is he? He, and he is an entity.
He's an entity, I suppose he is. But like, again, I don't want to examine it in too much detail, okay, but it's a sense that there is somebody looking out for us, that there is somebody minding us. At night I say my prayers. I am grateful for everything that I have. Please keep us... you know, safe and well and all of that. And I feel like I'm praying to a someone,
okay,
to an individual. However, I am also open to it being kind of more of a feeling of being protected in the world or anchored in the world. But again, like if I go too far down the examining it route, I'm like, oh, surely this can't really be a thing, can it? But my lovely God that helped me to stop being sad when we say my grand died or like friends that passed away or anything like that, that person and that feeling that there are people who have died belong to me, that they've gone somewhere. That is probably more important to me, a sense that we don't finish when we die, we'd say.
So there is life after death.
I would very much like there to be, whether there is or not.
I'll take it.
Enjoy living more after I die.
Tyke, what's your concept of God, shall we say?
Well, everything that Laura just said there, my conception of it would hold true both for me and for her, I think, insofar as for me, it's a kind of a conception or almost like consciousness or a feeling. It isn't a physical entity anymore, but it probably was when I was a kid or whatever. But there's nothing in my conception that's at loggerheads with yours, if you know what I mean, which is probably a good place to be, like if you're theistic. Although I would still use the term God, but a subtle thing that has changed from, say, my childhood to now, when I find myself praying, because I do pray, I'm not a practicing anything. I don't actually practice any religion, but I meditate a lot and I find that prayer is some sort of kind of adjunct to that process. When I pray, I feel like I'm looking into myself. I'm praying into myself. I don't tend to look up. So I'm not praying to like a lad in a kind of a spatial location, be it heaven or elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't look up either. And I used to maybe be more inclined to verbalise my prayers out loud, whereas I just think them now. So in some way, that is connected with consciousness then, that I'm thinking the prayers and I'm assuming he's getting them on his transmitter.
I think it's all happening inside of us, and by us I mean all of us. So individually and on a microcosm, it's in me, but it's in you, it's in all of us. And I think there's the potential for and the reality of all good and evil inside us. And I think everyone has got the potential for great good and great evil, but it's all happening inside themselves, whatever. So that's why I tend to pray inwards for more growth and more goodness to come out. That's my conception of...
Coming at it from a scientific background, because obviously I studied science in college and, you know, generally speaking, those two things seem to be at loggerheads. Science you have based on observable truths, I suppose you would call it. Evolution, which is kind of deemed anathema to certain religious groups or whatever it is. I actually found it bizarrely the opposite, in that the more I studied biology and the more I studied the structure of things right down to kind of cellular level or genetic level, the more I kind of think, this can't all just be by chance, or this can't just be kind of, okay, all right, it has time on its side, like random mutations happening over millions and millions of years, but it's so, like human life and all life, all cellular life is just so sophisticated that it would seem like surely something is guiding this process other than just random chance.
Well, I always found it very consoling talking to you anytime I ever did, because you have a science background. And I'd say to you, I remember saying to you a few times, what about God, Dom? And you were always very positive about it. But that's because, as well, somebody was talking to me about scientists the other day. Scientists, though they have the courage of their convictions, they'll never say something is absolute fact because they're open to...
Well, if they do, they're not a scientist, Laura. If you're a proper scientist, you're aware of the limitations of science and the limitations of actually saying, like, this is true and this is not. All right, it's true with a system that we've devised, but that system is far from perfect.
Well, that's why I think someone like Dawkins, who is probably like the atheist...
That's Philip Dawkins.
Willie Dawkins.
Willie Dawkins, he was a junior B hurler with BlackRock. he, I suppose, is like the atheist rock star of the last kind of 20 years. I don't think he ever uses the term atheist, even though he's known as an atheist. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's like, if I'm a scientist, I can't be an atheist because that's cutting off scientific progression or whatever.
I think the way I reconcile the two in my head is that, like, there could be a God out there,
yeah,
but I'm not going to kind of depend on him. for things, or her, or whatever you want to call it. It's like, my father often talked to me about the four potential scenarios. So, scenario one, there is a God and you believe in him. Perfect. You've done the right thing. Scenario two, there is no God, but you've believed in him. Not the worst thing to happen because, you know, it's given you a structure in your life, whatever it is. There's no God and you don't believe in him. That's okay because you haven't missed out on anything. The only one scenario that's potentially negative is there is a God and you haven't believed in him.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah.
So if you're playing the odds, you're better off believing in him than not believing in him.
I think I definitely identify with the one of like, maybe there isn't one, but certainly believing in one has greatly given me great peace. And I want to pass that on to my children.
And I think whether there is or there isn't, if it's a positive impact in your life, that's all you have to go with, you know?
Yeah, well, my conception of God would be like doing the best you can do for yourself and others around you. Like if you're going for that conception, whether he exists or not really, for me, just speaking for myself now, has become irrelevant because I'm not getting bogged down. I'm not sitting down on my chair going, is he up there or not? Where is he?
Knock.
Like if I just dedicate my time as much as I can within reason to try and grow myself because I can feel myself growing. And try and help. I know this sounds a bit pretentious now, whatever.
No, it makes sense.
And to try and help others. If I just get busy doing that stuff instead of just sitting down. Because I think one of the things that turned me off religion was that like I was not in every case, but like I grew up definitely knowing some Catholics and they were sometimes mean in their actions, but they were unbelievably pious and aesthetic, whatever. And that really turned me off the whole thing.
100%. Agree with that.
I
have met a lot of like people that would say they are devoutly religious, and yet they're the ones that are the first to want to bitch, the first to be unkind. And I feel it's almost like they feel they have carte blanche to do it because they've got such a devotion to God. That connection is so strong that there isn't moral repercussions for them then.
Johnny went to Mass, he never missed a Sunday. Johnny went to hell for what he did on Monday. You ever heard that expression?
I have to go now.
Don't want you to talk for 2 minutes.
It basically means that
Johnny will stop talking.
It's kind of what you were kind of talking about. It's this pious person who's at Mass every Sunday, and they're the ones who go up and they kneel down in front of the priest and they kind of make a big song and dance of them receiving communion. You know those people?
I do.
And yet they're not very nice people. They're not Christian in their behavior.
There's a lot of that.
Can I put a splash of philosophy in with this?
Splash away.
Here it comes. Socrates.
Socrates, exactly.
He's a tease.
Socrates, one of his kind of conundrums that he'd have with his interlocutors was, is it good because the gods decree, or do the gods decree it because it's good? Which is it's a central maxim for like, are you doing it to get in Goddy's good books, or are you just doing it, basically?
I have a phrase, it's shibba-dabba-doo-bop, boop-boop-a-dee-ba.
That's actually from Greece, musical.
That's Plato, though,
Guys, can I bring it back to being a mother? When I had my babies...
Mother God.
The two of them.
Mother of God.
Mother of God, they were pulled out of me. And I thought to myself, these two humans are proof that there is a God. Because, bop, and another one, there was two. And indeed, from out the sunroof, they did come. But I felt like this is a magical little human that has come into my world. And that made me feel like, no, there is something out there. Because these two... bloody excellent presence that I do feel God given about the babies, because they're healthy, they're wonderful, they're great crack,
they're perfect, like
they're well you know, perfect is a
but
perfection,
you know what I mean?
From kind of a like they've never been nasty to anyone so far in their lives, and they're just doing
and
good.
they're just the whole miracle of childbirth.
Can I jump in, Laura?
Please both get feet. Your big boots and jump in, baby.
The only thing that troubles me in my God conception and my, I feel like there is a God. Okay, now if you believe in a God that is some
sort of,
if you
believe in love, at the love,
on the whole scene. You were blessed with two beautiful children. I think of myself being blessed with an amazing child. What about God not blessing others? Or to go back to the old adage.
This is a problem.
This is something I've always, and I've never read, thought, felt or imagined a satisfactory answer to that. And maybe it will come down the road. But I remember talking to my mother about this. God rest her soul. She was a big God guy herself. And she would often say, I'd say to her, just trying to annoy her really when I was younger and more annoying, I'd say, do you know, ma'am, like you believe in
you
God.
You are more annoying.
You can imagine.
Wow.
You know, he found your cigarettes or whatever you're looking for, whatever you're praying for today. Like, why doesn't he help starving children in Africa? And my mother would always say, he can't be everywhere. So what my mother was saying there basically is he's making his choices.
He can't be omnipresent.
Well, this is where I don't like to pick too hard. This is where I'm like, oh, get your fingers away now from the picking. Yeah, I don't know. And you're right, there isn't a satisfactory answer.
Find some answer that kind of can possibly explain
Give us one, lovey.
Well, just that in my version of it, this all-powerful deity created the world and he created free will and was like, all right, off you go. I'm not going to interfere.
Did he also create like childhood sicknesses that are like childhood bad illnesses?
That's part and parcel of it.
Well, I suppose man ultimately created most of them. Like, yeah. By your logic,
not necessarily. No,
is that just
not
a nature of evolution that like true things evolving like illnesses?
But like with him and no.
Like he created the means or the wherewithal for this planet to develop and evolve itself. So and he's like, I'm not going to...
You don't believe in an interventionist God no. then?
He's kind of a hands-off kind of a
guy. He's kind of a, look, I've given you what you need and it's up to you to do with it.
Do you believe in that everything is already planned out for us?
Like, certainly not.
See, I think I do. That's called
predestination.
Predestination. Mm. I think I have a little bit of predestination in me.
Well, I think I'm a bit cynical in that regard. Like, I also don't believe in soulmates or anything like that. Or, like, the one.
I do believe in the one.
We'll get back to that in Love Part 2.
I believe spiritual interventions.
John Murphy.
Like you, Dom, I don't believe they're happening by God. I don't think God is the force of the spiritual intervention. It's through your deepening relationship with God that you're creating your own spiritual interventions,
I feel like,
if you know what I mean. I don't God sticking his magic finger down and changing.
Yeah,
the,
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
I feel like believing in predestination, though, gives you almost like a get out of jail free card. I'm like, sure, it's all planned anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know? This was meant to be. But at the same time, that's not how I view it. But I do feel it's the thing of, I feel like you're exactly where you're meant to be at any given time. That's probably not believing in predestination. That's just being at peace with where I am right now.
Well, I know someone who every time something happens, they're like, oh, it's a sign.
Everything happens for a reason.
It's a sign.
I'm into
signs.
Sign.
I'm like, it's not
I'm
a sign.
Everything happens for
it's
a reason.
Not a sign. It's a sign that we've done something stupid. It's not a sign
Listen
that...
Listen to this though,
everything
right?
Everything happens for a reason.
Listen to this now, okay? When I was in secondary school,
there was
a tragedy in our school, Ooh. Right?
Okay. Be careful with your jokes.
I think I learned a lesson there, actually.
Okay. Bear with me now because this is convoluted, right? But we had a dog called Jeff and Jeff had been missing for 2 weeks. No word of a lie, right? We had just kind of given up on him. We were like, that's it. He's gone off. He was a bit of a lunatic anyway. And we were like, okay.
Gone to the proverbial farm and cove.
Farm and mead. So that was fine. So this awful thing happened and we were at a removal. And just as we were finished walking back from the removal just to our car. So we'll say where we were was about 20 minutes from my house in a car. Jeff just appeared in front of us, the dog, just walking in front of us. Right, he's been missing for 2 weeks. This is genuinely true. And he just appeared in front of me and my dad. Popped him into the car, brought him home. Mum was like, how did you get on? We were like, wait until you see who's in the boot.
We've got Jeff.
And I just think that's weird. Because that's not, I'm not saying it's a sign, but I'm saying there's some weird spiritual something going on there. How did that dog find us at that moment, at that sad time, so far away from when he went missing?
I can say with absolute certainty that there are things going on that are beyond our comprehension.
Yes, like, I agree with that, yeah.
I think it's quite arrogant of us to assume, well, we know everything that's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, 100 years ago, if you were to tell people about, like, I don't know, certain kinds of electromagnetic radiation or whatever it is, they would think you're absolutely insane, the way that we think some people nowadays are insane, where they talk about, like, energy fields and crystals and things like that we just don't understand. So I'm not very quick to just write things off as being quackery. I'm saying, okay, it could be the case, but I'm not going to trust it. For example, when you were talking about Jeff there a second ago.
What a great name for a dog.
I remember when my grandmother passed away a couple of years ago, and the day that we said goodbye to her, we were going towards the car in the car park of Cork University Hospital, and two robins started like flying all around the car. They landed on the roof and they flew over on the bank as well. I know a lot of people think that like robins are people who've passed on who are communicating. And in that moment in time, whatever emotional state I was in, I was like, that's my grandmother reunited with my grandfather who died in the in the 1980s, whatever it was. And
you
like,
actually had that feeling.
I had that feeling. I was watching the two robins going, that's really nice.
I'm blown away by that.
That's the two of them back together now. But then, you know, a couple of days later, I was going, That was ridiculous.
That was a live, love, laugh
that.
Moment like, I had, like,
pretty
but
much.
There's nothing wrong with taking that as a moment of comfort.
Absolutely.
Then. Do you know, like, my husband's mom passed away before I ever got to meet her. And so she never met my daughter or anything. But like that, we have a video of Polly playing with a little robin. And you can see that the robin is really, really playing with her. And like, we have a sense that that is Shane's mom in some way. Also, when my mom met Shane for the first time, she always says she got like a shock, she got like a fright, a bolt out of the blue to kind of like sit up and pay attention to this person. And she feels like it was the mom sending a message to another mother. Now look, whether it's real or imaginary, how beautiful to think that or to feel that or to hold that as some connection or a sign from someone saying, we approve of you, or would you know what I mean? I don't really care whether it's real or not. It's a bit like with about God in the first place. I don't really necessarily care whether it's real or not, but it has helped me through so much.
Well, I know a lot of people.
Not that I've been through a lot, like.
I know a good few people who have been.
Sorry, I don't want to be through a lot either as well. Do you know the way I don't like. I don't want
it's
to be.
It's a sign.
Too, yeah.
Are you finished?
To, yeah.
I know a good few people who were written off, say, with drink or drug issues, totally written off. There's no way this man can be helped or this woman can be helped, whatever, are now fully functional people, thriving, blah, 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 blah. For them, it's maybe they do or do not put the word God in it, but they say there's some spiritual intervention where science couldn't help them, doctors couldn't help them, and they were helped. So like your point there, who am I, or who's that friend I'm telling you about who can't put his pants on to say,
can we get this guy on the show?
Go up to any of those people and go, oh, whatever you think it is anyway, it wasn't that. So it had to be something else. Like, no, as you said, like, nobody can actually put their finger on it. And I think the best way that you could kind of sum all that up is there's stuff going on that we can't understand. Do you want to sit around thinking, is it God or not for the rest of your life? Or do you want to just kind of have more nice things? And for me, the nicer I am, I tend to believe that more nice things happen.
Is that kind of law of attraction stuff as well? A little bit.
It just tends to happen for me, like.
Do you know, me and my mother went to John Edward, right? I'd say he's an absolute charlatan. He's
a psychic medium
or whatever.
John and
crossing
Edward,
over.
No,
yeah.
Not Jedward, no.
Two lads.
Crossing over with John Edward, right? But at it now, I thought everything he said was for us. He's like, there's a man standing, and I'm like, that's me, Mab, that's me. And Mam's like, Laura, put your hand down for the love of God. There was one about a bus crash. Nobody in my family has
that's
ever been
me.
In a bus
Mam,
crash. I'm
me.
Like, Mam, the bus, remember the
Uncle
bus?
Uncle Jerry in the
I
bus.
I just wanted him to talk to me because I was like, if he talks to me, he might my crowd might come out then.
Did you base the clock up a sketch on that event?
A little bit,
it sounds quite
a little
like
bit. And I had, I had my gran who has passed away. I had her primed. I was like, right, gran, this is what you have to say now to him so that
gran,
I believe it's true. Come
now.
On, come on. But I will say that leaving that, okay, so we didn't get any reading. There was some moments that you'd be like, okay, but
Grant,
leaving
no,
that.
Go.
Come on, Grant. Leaving that, I don't think anyone left that feeling badly, right? No matter how much of a charlatan he is, nobody left with anything other than hope, I think. I felt like, oh my God, maybe there is something out there. Or like, and I think even though it's a whole showbiz thing and he's probably getting a rake of money and he was whizzed off in a car afterwards and all of that, I still think I went away feeling like a little bit like there's something. There
well, I think
something.
There are two ways to look at it. I think the tickets were roughly about €70. Am I right in saying that?
I don't believe I would have paid that much for them, but maybe they were.
I think they were actually because. Okay, well, when I was working in the Opera House, he came there at one point, and I think the tickets were around that price.
Okay, yeah,
so you could argue this is a very skilled professional.
It helps that he's handsome as well.
Exactly, charming, well spoken, who is exploiting old people out of their money.
He's got a kind of a down to earth kind of Boston accent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
one,
take
that's,
my money.
That's €70.
That's one way of looking at it. But the other, as you said, is he is providing hope to 1,000 people at a time. And
we,
is that
we
worth?
We left elated.
Yeah.
Even though we still now, we would still be sensible enough to have like lots of questions. But we left with a sense of a, oh my God, maybe he did connect. What are you laughing
there's
at?
First actually, question would be, can I get my 70 quid back?
There's actually a great Darren Brown documentary where he turns an average
Darren Brown, is it?
I think it's Darren Brown.
Oh, yeah.
He turns some average person into like one of these faith healer psychic media. It's a fantastic watch. I'd recommend it. I want to get back to, you were talking about the meditation aspect of it.
Yeah.
I think that's what going to Mass used to be. It used to be ceremony. It used to be tradition. It was ritual. It was almost transcendent. Like there was a big chanting element to it. A lot of the things that you used to sing it at like a high Mass is almost like Gregorian chant. And I've done a bit of research into this, right? Gregorian chant uses what are called the solfeggio frequencies. There are certain frequencies that actually cause parts of your brain to resonate.
Okay.
So depending on the frequency, a different part of your...
You're switching off now, love. I just wanted to know.
No, but I'll finish this point.
Would you finish it in Gregorian chant?
I won't. Different parts of your brain resonate at different frequencies. So depending on the tone, it'll hit a different area of your brain. It actually has a physiological effect.
Okay.
So you would come away from this ceremony going, I feel like a different person.
Buzzed up.
You would be buzzed. Yeah, yeah. Because, there's biochemistry behind it. That's all gone from modern mass. What I loved about going into a church was kind of the sanctuary aspect to it.
Mm.
I remember going into the Franciscan church behind the courthouse.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, you step from a busy street into this, it almost looks like a kind of a Byzantine mosaic-filled church, and it's just dead silence.
I would say Byzantine there.
I would say Byzantine, but Byzantine.
Sailing to Byzantium.
But it's that aspect of
it. No, I agree with you 100%.
It's this headspace.
If you read, Joyce's early stuff when he talks about the Mass replaced, theatre. He got into theatre from Mass because it was so theatrical.
Well, we kind of talked about that with the Easter Mass. It's full of theatre.
Well, I just never understand why they don't learn it off. As in, why don't the priest knows what reading or what gospel is coming up every week? Why doesn't he learn it off and perform it properly?
They're phoning it in.
They're phoning it in.
For a long time, when I was going to Mass when I was a teenager or whatever.
My alarm, guys. That's just my alarm. And I knew it was coming.
Well, I'm alarmed.
I always thought to myself, this is your big moment here, guys.
Yeah.
You're celebrating.
Take it home, Jerry.
The greatest God we've ever known. And it's all so low-key.
Mm. Yeah.
This should be a pumped-up celebration.
Too much tinged with sadness. And this is why I struggle with passing religion on to my kids. Is because of... we used to go to St. Peter and Paul's church. Now, that is a scary church. It's a big, dark, scary church. The statues are terrifying. It's a really, spooky
it's imposing.
Church. Mm. I don't want to bring them there. But then you go to somewhere like the cathedral, which is where me and Shane got married. And it's bright and wonderful and there's amazing choir and beautiful music and everything. And I'm into that. But there's an awful lot in the passing down of Catholicism. There's an awful lot you have to pass down that I would prefer to pass by. And that is why I struggle. But I do want to give Polly and Alfie a sense of a higher power that can just help them to be okay.
You can totally do that.
My mum and dad said they'll help with the religious aspect of it because they're former primary school teachers and that they will be able to couch it in the happiest terms rather than it being you're a sinner.
I kind of like the spooky aspect of it. I think part and parcel of going into a church and getting those chills is that the cathedral is kind of a spooky place.
Solemnity of it. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's wow, I'm getting a chill down my spine here.
The cathedral isn't scary, it's lovely.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
See, I don't really want lovely. I want kind of a gothic cathedral that's, awe-inspiring. Yeah, exactly.
I do like the way they're stunning. All right. A lot of the churches in Cork, I would still dip in to do meditation, whatever. And the insides of them are stunning when you're on your own.
I agree. I read somewhere that they're supposed to kind of mimic a forest. It's you got the light coming in through the stained glass windows and the pillars, which is a nice thought. Something that is on the topic of spookiness, it's only started happening to me recently, is that every time I go through a graveyard now, or near a graveyard,
a man comes out and starts whispering.
And he's like,
What are you doing?
Well, I live near one in Balbriggan. But the thought occurs to me, it's like, wow, this is a field with a load of boxes, with a load of bones.
Well, stop it.
No, but this is a new thought that has occurred to me.
Is it more of an appreciation for the people that have passed away?
No, it's a kind of... I'm not being facetious here. I'm saying the realisation of what a graveyard actually is just hitting me.
No, I never think about that.
I don't think...
But that's what it is.
I don't think the people are there. Do you know? I've never gone to visit. I've only once ever. I'd say visited my grand's grave because I don't feel like she's there. I feel like she's off.
Well, whether or not she is there, her soul or whatever you want to say.
Hey, don't you be talking about my grand's
bones. Anyone's bones,
soul alone, but
whether their soul or their essence is there or not, there is a box. Six feet under the ground.
Do you want to be buried, cremated, or given to science?
I'd have to thrown out the window.
I want to be given to science. I think that'd be unbelievable.
I think give my organs to science or let my organs be donated and then burn me.
Can you please give my genes to science?
Which genes? The ones you've on now, lovely? The blue ones?
Yes.
They're a bit ragged.
Yeah.
Can I say as well that I want to be an organ donor even though I haven't ticked off the box? And I actually know people that needed organs and none of them had any effect on me. The fella that won the Eurovision 2 years ago for Portugal, he needed a new heart. And I'm like... I'm an organ donor now, guys.
Can I just say something? Because we're coming, I presume we're getting close to the edge of morning.
Very close to the edge.
I just wanted to say the biggest God experience. And I'm not ashamed to say it, actually, because I was thinking, should I or should I not say this? You know what? Balls out, say it. The closest I ever got to God, the biggest God experience I ever had in my life was with psilocybin. And I'm willing and interested enough in that, to say that.
Would you explain to our listeners what psilocybin is?
It would be the active, it's the active hallucinogenic ingredient in element in magic mushrooms.
Okay.
And that is balls, God exists. The whole way through that, those experiences, I was like, there is, and I think anyone who's taken, I know like an intellectual hero of yours, Jordan Peterson, has talked about that being a similar thing where it's like, there's some, well, whether you call it God or not, the whole way through the experience, you're like, oh my God, there's this other reality behind the reality wherein it's perfect, it's amazing, it's what Plato described as the perfect forms. Behind everything that we're talking about, everything's sorted in there. And that feeling is unbelievable. So you'll have like little scary moments in it, but like this feeling of like, oh my God, like it's all grand and it's all going to be fine.
I'm going to need to get me some of them for a stir.
Well,
fry.
Oh, you'd love
the question,
man.
You'd the question it would raise for me is,
I think I'd probably die.
How do we know? How do we know that that's die. Not reality? And that what we perceive right now is actually not what reality
are
is.
Are we in purgatory?
Maybe.
Or that could also be true. Yeah. But the feeling inside yourself of like, it's not an intellectual thing. It's a knowing that like, there's so much more.
But are you not just hallucinating?
No, because you're not actually hallucinating anything. These are kind of like, they're like convictions. Like the first meaningful experience I had on it was realizing, oh, you're doing the wrong thing completely with your life. And I was totally right. Because I remember I was telling you at the time, like I was like in a band, thought I was going to be like a serious person of some description, like maybe, I don't know, a serious author or something or other.
Sorry, not
and like, a bit harsh.
We'll go with Hosier.
Sorry.
And in the middle of the night, I was just like, you're funny. Your life's ridiculous. Everyone around you is totally ridiculous. Gags.
Do you know the way if
and I
we...
went gags then, like, you're not telling me that was a meaningful experience for me.
I think
are
it
you,
was.
Are you not telling me that?
No, I'm not telling you anything. Like, for example, if you didn't eat breakfast, you'd see the world in a different way.
Mm.
You'd be agitated. You'd be aggressive with people. So maybe potentially psilocybin is a form of breakfast which allows us to see the world actually how it is, as opposed to in a kind of a neurotic way that we would normally see it.
Mm.
Food for thought.
Oh, lovely.
Should I not have gone there?
For thought.
Have a magic mushroom sandwich for breakfast tomorrow, guys.